Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We're grateful to have you as a listener, and we want to learn more about your listening habits and how we can serve you better. We have a survey running right now and would love to hear from you. It shouldn't take much more than 5 minutes to complete. Go to washingtonpost.com/podcast survey. That's washingtonpost.com/podcast survey. When you're done, you can enter a sweepstakes to win a $100 gift card. We really appreciate your help. Thanks so much. You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live. Bring the newsroom to you live.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Post Live. I'm Jackie Alemany, a congressional investigations reporter here at the Post. It's been 4 years since the world collectively held its breath while global effort was underway to rescue 12 young Thai soccer players and their coach from a cave that they became trapped in during an unforeseen monsoon. Academy Award winner Ron Howard's latest project takes that story to the big screen. I'm delighted today to be joined by Mr. Ron Howard and actor Joel Edgerton to talk about 13 Lives. Ron, Joel, welcome to Washington Post Live.
Thank you very much.
And I also, for our audience, want to add a little disclosure. The Washington Post and Imagine Entertainment recently announced a partnership to produce TV and film projects. Now that that's out of the way, Ron, let's get right to it. What was the motivation for you to take this story and make it into a feature film?
Well, it began with a screenplay by William Nicholson, who'd already been working on it for a year. Producers had gotten rights, had connected with Rick Stanton, John Valanthin, and others. And through that, Bill had begun to really synthesize this into, you know, a movie narrative. When I read it, while I had been, you know, certainly aware of the story and relieved by the outcome, I had no idea the different brands of courage that was actually on display and was required for this to have been achieved. And I just thought it was a remarkable opportunity. I love the cross-culturalism of it. A lot of cinematic challenges for me as a veteran director, but first and foremost, it's that big idea. If the world could come together and achieve this for these boys, what else could we do? And they gave us this remarkable object lesson through that achievement.
And Joel, your character plays a pivotal role in the success of the boys' ultimate rescue. What was the most surprising thing that you learned about Dr. Harris and it's sort of that brand of courage, as Ron mentioned?
Well, the big surprising thing for me is you know, the mechanics and the how of how they got the boys out of the cave, which, you know, in that initial news cycle, like everyone around the world, I was glued to. There were aspects of that rescue that were kept sort of hidden from the public. Yeah, there was a slightly controversial aspect to it in the planning of it, in terms of how they got the boys out, especially knowing that as that plan was being activated and thought through, there was the risk that it wasn't going to be successful. So there was an understandable reason why the big surprising element and Dr. Harris's skill as a medical practitioner and how that was implemented and crucial in the rescue, why that was kept secret. I was excited to learn when I got involved with the project about those aspects. My jaw literally was on the floor when I started to learn, and I think as audience sort of learn the mechanics of the rescue, I call it the threading of the eye of the needle or this sort of high wire act of how it went down. That is a marvel, and it continues to shock me even more today as I think about it.
Yeah, actually, I meant to Google this after watching the film earlier this week. But One of Dr. Harris's initial reactions to this plan that Rich proposes to you during the film is that it's unethical and potentially problematic in that regard to put these kids under as an anesthesiologist. Can you go into a little bit more about some of the ethical quandaries that maybe you studied while playing this part?
I think the big salient point for me was how it became a pivotal aspect in Dr. Harris's life and potential future. I mean, no one had ever tried that before. You know, the idea of making anybody unconscious in a rescue situation, particularly underwater, had never been achieved or tried. The idea of it felt like it was unachievable. There was a real risk that in doing so, it would speed up the risk of danger for the children and lead, in the worst case scenario, to the death of a child or more. When you talk about how this situation came to a head as the waters were rising and the oxygen was depleting and the theory of keeping the kids in the cave throughout the whole monsoon season, the feeling was they were going to die if something wasn't tried. Now, what was really important for me is learning that Dr. Harris was hit with the crisis that if he didn't help and didn't try, these children were likely to die anyway. So he was willing to take the risk on the hope that the plan, as difficult as it was, would achieve the survival of at least one or more, or hopefully, you know, the majority of the children. But his feeling was there was a certain risk that at least some of the children would perish in the attempt, but better result than all of them perishing. That to me felt beyond medical and incredibly deeply personal when you look at an ethical and wonderful man looking down the barrel of the rest of his life, knowing he could have been instrumental, feeling that he had harmed children in attempting to help them.
And what Joel is talking about as it relates to his character and the characters that the person that he's playing is sort of what I found throughout the movie. And it went even beyond the divers and went beyond Dr. Harris. It went to, you know, this amazing level of volunteerism and problem solving under duress. There's a scene in Apollo 13 that people always want to talk about. People use it in film classes. They use it in history classes. And it's where they all just put a bunch of junk on a table and say, okay, the oxygen levels are running low. This is all they have to work with. How can we create, a scrubber so that we can recycle the air? And you know, it's all based from my interviews with people from NASA. But everybody loves that by the seat of your pants problem solving. And I kept encountering this over and over and over again in this movie from people who, you know, weren't necessarily professionals, you know, paid to work together. They were there because they cared about those kids.
Yeah. And a reminder for our audience quickly, we do want to hear from you. So if you have any questions throughout our program, please tweet your questions at us using the handle @PostLive. Ron, you actually created the perfect segue for my next question. Although the successful rescue mission was largely tied to the cavers, the film does show that it really took a vast effort from thousands to accomplish the mission. Can you talk a little bit more about how you showed the extent of the sacrifices made by local communities throughout the world to contribute to the aid and rescue of these boys?
Well, we had the framework of our story, the framework that actually occurred. It's a great movie narrative. One of the things that you can do in a scripted version is try to create that connection for the audience on an emotional level with a variety of characters through understanding those characters' relationships. And it's visceral. That's what drama is for. So my job was to first understand and then allow the audience to connect with the questions that would arise. You know, the flooding is coming. X, Y, and Z ideas are not working. What else? And what will it mean? And how does it feel to be on the ground there in that camp or in that cave or up on that mountain trying to help divert rainwater that was flooding into the cave, and they were trying to find ways to create this diversion program. People were, you know, slipping, sliding, breaking legs, unbelievable, and all there because they, you know, they wanted to be. So it's really just a matter of doing the research and then connecting it to scenes, building relationships, and recognizing the potential for, you know, for drama. And trying to share that in a little over a couple of hours in a compelling way for audiences.
Joel, I'm not sure if I heard you cough or laugh when Ron said people were slipping all over the place. Did you sustain any injuries during this filming?
That was definitely a cough. Yeah. No, I think the question of injuries was always. We definitely scratched our hands up. I remember early days. Doing these makeup tests where we were getting incredible amounts of scratches put on our hands. And the moment you went even into the set, the cave sets that Molly had designed and constructed, which are incredible when you see the film, you realize just how sharp these caves were. The big thing was understanding this when it came to the difficulty of underwater cave diving, zero visibility, the amount of equipment you're carrying, just how dangerous it was. And I think it really underlines the fact that as the world it got excited about the children being found after an extended period of time, just how difficult the task of getting them out was, and how extraordinarily unique the skill of underwater cave divers are and rescue divers, that meant that it wasn't an easy situation to just teach a bunch of young children to expect to have 30 years of diving skill in the space of a day or two.
And I can't think of a better word than the one Ron used, which is that this film is visceral and gripping, and in some parts pretty difficult to watch, knowing how strenuous some of the rescue operation really was. We have a clip from the film, so actually let's take a look.
Let's have a look.
Water, come fast.
Bloody hell. We'll have to dive them out.
Joel, what did you know about caving and diving before you landed this role?
Very little. And, you know, a lot of what I knew about cave diving came from watching the news about the cave rescue itself. And I knew that there was like this sort of thin percentage of human beings that were interested in cave diving, and I certainly never imagined that I'd be one of them. I mean, I still can't promise you that I would ever go on a crazy cave dive, but I'd be willing to dip my toe into it. I knew so little. I knew very little about scuba diving. I have to say at this point, like, we were led by an incredible team of divers, you know, particularly Rick and Jason, who were there on the actual dive, the rescue themselves, but an incredible team of Navy divers and rescue divers and salvage divers that guided us in a very quick amount of time from being novice divers to being able to, you know, on screen, pretend the skill necessary for what was required of us in the film. And, you know, it's even in a studio setting, you realize how difficult and dangerous it is, and we were very lucky to be led by such an incredible team.
And Ron, the 13 survivors would have no idea during their time in the cave that their story had captured international attention. You are a director who really digs into the research and the story. Can you talk a little bit about that process, getting to know these boys, and when they learned about the impact that their story had on a global scale?
Well, we had no access to the actual boys. So everything through contracts, arrangements through the Thai government and so forth. So all of our research was based on observation, divers who had gone in and seen the kids. And of course, you know, a fair amount of journalism done immediately after and also during, which had profiled kids. And, and their story was kind of elegantly simple. The coach was remarkable. He managed to keep them calm. The fact that they were a team to begin with meant a lot. Also, the fact that they were from the north. Northern Thailand is in some ways a challenging place to grow up. It's beautiful, but it's fraught with some social tensions and difficulties and economic challenges and so forth. And a lot of the Thai actors who I was working with, and also our consultants and so forth, all said that, you know, these boys from the north are tough. And we actually put that line into the movie. I relied a lot on the actors to become collaborators. I had a couple of great co-producers, both of whom have done some writing to do the translation, to interface with the actors in their own language. And I just kept imploring them, don't let a false moment get through. You've got to tell me. I'm not going to feel insulted. I'm not going to be upset. This is what we must do. Among three or four other goals we've got to achieve, we've got to have that authenticity. Because I also recognize, not only is that appropriate, but as a viewer, I want to know that care has been taken, and I want that insight. And the actors are going to reach a more emotional level, and with that pathway to empathy that I'm always trying to build through these kinds of scenes and situations for the performances to the audience is going to be there if they really own and believe in everything that they're saying and doing. And the kids had never acted before. So, for them, it's very honest, very raw, and it's very easy for them to connect this experience to themselves. Elsewhere, we had real, experienced professionals who I relied upon.
Why didn't the Thai government want you to directly interface with the boys?
We didn't ask. I mean, by the time I came onto the project, that was clearly understood that rights had been defined. And I took our producer's word for it. I think also, this is me surmising. I think there was so much chaos around the story I think that to some extent they wanted to put up a little firewall and protect the boys who are still growing, still going to school, from some kind of onslaught.
And Joel, I'm sure that for any parent watching this film, it would be impossible not to feel for the parents who are really in agony to learn that their sons are trapped in this cave and might not survive. What about the parents' stories did you learn in creating the film? And did they see this experience as a test of character?
Look, I was on my way barreling towards fatherhood as we were shooting the film. In fact, I became the father of twins a week or two before I even wrapped shooting my
Congratulations.
Session. Thank you. And as that was happening, I was thinking more and more about parenthood, the idea of your children being trapped and not knowing and having that terrible question mark. I think was one of the reasons why the entire world was gripped by this. It's like, as humans, we empathize about other human beings. Interestingly and understandably, despite culture, religion, race, any of that stuff. When human beings go missing, we place ourselves in that position. We watch because we care, and particularly when they're children. The idea of having to empathize with what the parents felt, I think, is an easy situation for anybody. In the film, there's so many moving parts in this film, and in the film, the point of view of the parents is really distilled into one particularly significant character who, personally, as a watcher of the film, is one of my favorite characters, and I think it speaks volumes to that empathetic aspect of why we're all drawn into this story. Is a lot of it came down to how would it be not just to be one of the children and the fear of not knowing, but to be one of the parents being helpless on the outside, not knowing what is possible and what the outcome was going to be.
And I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that we all know the boys ultimately survived being trapped in the cave for days on end. But if they had not survived, would you, Ron, have been as inclined to produce this story as a feature film?
Well, there'd be a different set of sort of human conditions surrounding the story, and I can't imagine what they would have been exactly. But had that process led to something that I felt could still be cathartic for audiences, it would be tragic, sure. But would there be something to learn from it still? Then possibly. I'm as a storyteller, I'm inclined to sort of look for stories that reinforce the viability and plausibility of optimism. But again, I would look at sort of what the thematics that outcome yielded and what do we learn, and where is the drama in that? Particularly, again, you're going to make a scripted film. You've got to be thinking about the fact that you're sharing information, but you also need to engage something deeper, the nervous system. That becomes cathartic for an audience. That then it becomes, engrossing and entertaining as well.
I want to dig a little deeper into that, because obviously humanity has been through a bit of a harrowing and unusual period of time over these last few years through the coronavirus pandemic. I'm wondering, other than catharsism, what do you think audiences right now are looking for when they are using film as an outlet in their everyday lives?
Well, I mean, for all time, storytelling has accomplished a number of things, and it's all a version of entertainment, because what we want is to be engaged, and we benefit from this. It can be escapism. It can relieve tension. That's incredibly viable. There are all kinds of genres that provide that information and that sense of empathy and catharsis is also a way in which human beings engage with narratives and get something out of it that gives them something to talk about, to think about, to grow with. And audiences more and more are being offered, a wide array of formats and approaches. I'm also directing documentaries. Here at Imagine Entertainment, we're doing short form, we're doing branded content, we're doing, movies and long form television and the documentaries. But it all comes back down to story, and story is always about character, thematics, and answering questions. Stimulating curiosity and paying that off in ways, whether that's, really broad, playful, fun comedy, or, darker tragedy, or the sort of the recreation of inspiring events, as we have with 13 Lives.
Faith plays a crucial role in this story. We learn that the soccer coach led his team through meditation and prayer while being trapped in the cave. We have another clip here, which we're going to look at, which gets at a bit of that role that Faith played in the boys' ultimate survival.
Thank you.
You are very brave. Have you stayed so strong?
We are a team. We help each other, and our coach help us.
Coach,
ผมต้องขอโทษด้วยนะครับที่พาเด็กมาเสี่ยงอันตราย
ไม่จริงครับ
ไม่ได้ครับ
ขอโทษที่สุด
ช่วยหมด
คร
ับ
ไม่ใช่ครับโค้ช
คนเก่งที่สุดครับ
Is because of our coach we are stay strong. He teach us to meditate.
โค้ชบอกให้เราสวดมนต์ครับ
And we pray.
You pray.
Yes.
I bet you do. Alright.
How did you?
Winnie!
This is to get out. Good work.
Joel, were you surprised to learn the extent to which faith impacted their survival?
Yeah, I remember when this happened and early in the shoot, I remember joking about if that was 12 10-year-old versions of me in that cave, it would be a very different moment that the divers discovered. I would have imagined myself to be incredibly selfish, fearful and desperate. And not to say that there weren't an entire tapestry of feelings those kids went through and experiences they had. One of the things that really moved me and broke my heart is watching the video of when Rick and John first discovered the children, about how organized, how polite, how almost bizarrely casual they were about that discovery.Did not seem like 12 boys and a coach who'd been trapped without knowing where and how for 12 days. And I think that faith had a lot to do with that, and I think that the coach's ability to rally those boys and to instill a sense of confidence in them through meditation was important. And I think having travelled extensively in Thailand myself,there's a mysterious elegance and beauty to Thai culture, which I can't even begin to understand, having never lived there myself. But there's an impressive nature that perhaps is founded in their faith that says a lot. And as I said, if that was 12 versions of 10-year-old me in there, that scene would look... I don't mean to be facetious, that scene would have looked very different. It would have been like, get me out right now, please. I'm scared.
It's so interesting to hear Joel say that, because a couple of the divers mentioned, just as we were talking to them, interviewing them, maybe more than a couple, that they went into this not thinking about spirituality as a factor, but there is a lot of, a lot of mythology around the mountain, the sleeping princess. Maybe this was a test of the boys. Maybe it's a test of society, these kinds of questions. And they went into it with a degree of cynicism. And we sort of, we demonstrate this in the movie. It's a reflection of several conversations that I had. And by the end, they had to wonder.And of course, that region in the north also has its own specific version of Buddhism, which also includes some belief systems that preceded Buddhism, but have been sort of synthesized into some of their ceremonies and prayers. Again, I leaned heavily on research, but also I cast a lot of actors from the north.Who would have an intimate sense, not only of that very specific dialect and phrasing, but again, also culture. And it was a great experience for me creatively to see certain scenes shift and evolve into something else. And some of these moments around the spirituality were very meaningful and potent to me, and and put me in a mindset.To take that aspect of the movie very, very seriously as it related to, sort of empowering people to carry on and make this possible. Again, I thought of the whole thing as kind of an anatomy of a miracle, and which is kind of a glib way of saying it. But I, but I, uh, Sometimes I do that with a film, just to sort of keep checking moment by moment, scene by scene. You know, are we understanding this? And I wanted to be sort of as dimensional as I could about that. But I also wanted to be very granular and understand it on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, you do see some of that faith. Ultimately, you make some subtle allusions to it rubbing off on the divers after the experience is said and done. But we unfortunately only have time for one question left, but I think it's the perfect question to end this conversation. Ron, this is a question from an audience member. James from North Carolina asks that about you have directed other movies based on actual events and persons, such as Apollo 13, Beautiful Mind, and Frost Nixon. What similarities and differences may have been a factor in your determination to direct 13 Lives?
Well, when I first made Apollo 13, I was terrified of tackling a true story. I thought it would limit my creativity, and I found it to be the opposite. And I also really loved the way it connected with audiences, not just that the film was popular and well-regarded, but on a personal level, the way it stimulated people's sort of connection to the story. You asked earlier about ways that films can entertain. You know, every genre, even when it's playful fantasy, you know, it's really about transporting an audience and stimulating their imagination. And I found that in this sort of, you know, this kind of nonfiction scripted kind of storytelling, you could do those things. And in fact, the audiences were really ready for it. So I had confidence that even though I didn't know anything about Thai culture, I'm claustrophobic in caves myself, I had just no experience with that, this was a great story. And there were a lot of those details that could be connected, could answer questions, could stimulate an audience's curiosity, and pay off in a really rewarding way for an audience. And it would be an interesting personal journey for me, which it certainly was.
And Joel, you get the final word. What message do you hope people will take away from having watched this film?
Well, it's the same message that really drew me in to want to be a part of this film, apart from, you know, the excitement of being able to, you know, go to work for Ron, is this story. You know, you asked before about the outcome. The fact that the outcome was positive, and given, like you pointed out, what we've just been through, what everybody's been through in their own version of the last few years, has been an undulating series of highs and lows, for some incredibly low. To have a true story that shows the strength of human collaboration, the sense of human empathy, and what is possible when we all come together selflessly to solve a problem for other people, despite the lines of culture and all these things that otherwise divide us, is such a great thing to be able to see at the moment. And the fact that it's true underlines for us that it is possible. It's not just some fictional dreaming. It's there to remind us that no matter how difficult things are, people will put aside so much of themselves in order to reach out to help other people. I wanted to be involved in that.
Ron, Joel, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we are all out of time. Ron Howard and Joel Edgerton, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on a fantastic film.
Thanks so much. Great talking to you.
Thanks for listening. For more information on our upcoming programs, go to WashingtonPostLive.com.